Columbia Mayor Brian Treese was on Columbia Morning August 21st. That's Eclipse Day. So we started our conversation on that topic.
Well, I asked Amy Schneider at the Convention and Visitors Bureau to kind of give me an update from yesterday. And so far yesterday, they had about 400 people out at Cosmo Park. They're about 300 people at the 5K. But they've had guests from as far as far away as Australia, Norway, Canada, Chicago, Spain, L.A. There's a group from the Japanese Meteorology Club here. We've had about 20 private planes land at the Columbia Regional Airport to experience the eclipse with tie-down spots reserved for many more. So, I don't know if we're going to get the total experience that was anticipated, but I know we've planned well in advance for whatever may occur. There's about 3,000 parking spots at Cosmo Park available. And I think we're probably going to, it was pretty light traffic. I took the long way in this morning. I think we're well prepared for whatever may occur.
We are going to visit with the mayor about tonight's city council meeting. It goes on as scheduled. It's several hours after the eclipse is over, and unless there is like this gridlock, people will be able to get downtown. I would think of all the places where the traffic is not going to be any different than it normally would be downtown.
I think so. Our city employees are still working today. Our trash is still being picked up. Our Parks and Rec folks are working overtime with festivities and making sure that crowds are controlled and we can come in and work as well.
Do you know of any? Well, there has to be collaboration and coordination between the emergency management team and all of the different law enforcement agencies that are at work, and just for any kind of unforeseen or unpredictable type of event that might happen.
You know, I think anytime you have thousands of people coming into town for any type of event, whether that's a football game or an eclipse or a festival of sorts, and that's essentially what this is. Of course, that type of transportation management and emergency operations management is going to prepare for whatever may happen, even if it's just an influx of 911 calls.
Mm-hmm. All right, Connor, what's on your mind? Good morning.
Yes, sir. I'm in Central Columbia over by Columbia College, and it's raining.
There's a little bit of rain now. That's what Kenton was saying he was afraid of. Well, thanks for the call. I'll have to pull up our radar that we have right here and see whether that looks like that's going to amount to much or not. But, gosh, if that is, and I can see just a really – that's not going to last very long. That'll be gone before you're off the air here today, Mayor, and that's in 20 minutes. Let's get to the meeting tonight.
Of course.
The United Way and the organization that it was going to work with to help run a forum or a community involvement event talking about policing in Columbia. I don't think you were surprised, because I don't think I was surprised when they said, you know what, we pull out of this and let the city make a decision to go on a way that it feels more comfortable going after the public hearing in mid-July.
I think that's right. And when I was with you before, I didn't know what that council... I was frustrated with the process. It seemed forced at best and rushed at a minimum. And we heard loud and clear at that city council meeting that they were not comfortable with these handpicked consultants. And, I've always said from the very beginning of this, whatever we do, it has to be bottom up. It has to be very organic. It has to be competitively bid. We shouldn't be using public safety dollars to initiate this type of community engagement. And we don't need to spend $70,000 to have a discussion. Since that public hearing, the United Way has withdrawn their proposal. I want to wait and see what the council's discussion is tonight on that. I also want to wait and see the NAACP is having a forum tomorrow night that I think is a great opportunity for us to listen. And I want to see what comes out of that, and if the major stakeholders participating in that event want to see more of that, if they want to see it at different locations, and really listen to the public that we're trying to engage with as we move forward.
They are calling it Community Engagement on Policing Equity and Civility, mm-hmm. and that is hosted by the NAACP with several other groups supporting that. So that is not a replacement for what the council had in mind back in February when they started to say we need a conversation, or can it be a replacement for that?
I think that remains to be seen. I don't know that it's a substitute for what we had in mind. And look, that was being organized and planned without without council's participation, and I think that's great. I mean, that's I'm going to be there. I was invited to be there, and I look forward to hearing what comes out of those discussions and those nodes. With mental health and affordable housing and policing and all of the issues that kind of go into the diverse, inclusive community.
And that will be at Second Missionary Baptist Church, which is downtown at 407 East Broadway, obviously near 4th Street. Downtown Second Missionary Baptist Church tomorrow evening, 7 to 9, community engagement on policing, equity, and civility. Semi-related to that, because one of the groups that's going to be involved with that event tomorrow is also Race Matters Friends. Now, they came out late last week, and they said that they were disappointed or looking for a statement from the city, either city elected leadership or city management leadership, on what had happened in Charlottesville the weekend before this past one. What are your thoughts about a city statement, maybe a united statement from the council members as well as the city to say whatever they want to say about that particular event?
Well, of course, I strongly condemn Nazis and neo-Nazis and the type of white supremacist racism and violence that was on display in Charlottesville. I thought those images were chilling, frankly. I went to the vigil last Sunday in Peace Park, and I issued a statement on Monday condemning that violence. And the other thing that I want to say here is, a lot of communities right now are struggling with how to dismantle some of these monuments and arguing, the flashpoint. And we can talk about the underlying ingredients for the racism that was on display in Charlottesville. But the flashpoint there was removing that statue. And I'm proud in Columbia, we're actually erecting monuments that confront in an honest way Columbia's history there. We put up a monument to the sharp end and kind of that destruction of the black middle class, during the Land Reclamation Authority in the 50s and 60s. We put up a monument and a headstone to the black soldiers who served in the Civil War at the Columbia Cemetery. I presided over the monument, lest we forget, James T. Scott, that was hung from the Stewart Road Bridge for a rape he did not commit. And so I'm proud that as a community we're having those tough discussions there. And going back to Tuesday's community engagement, one of the words there is civility. And I think we're having these discussions with the civility and the dignity that we need to move forward.
Since you brought up what you brought up, I observed that there are some communities struggling with the name Lee. Mm. We have Lee Elementary. Other communities are saying, might we want to change the name of a school named after Robert E. Lee? And then also, I find it to be rather a... I mentioned this a time or two, Grant Elementary School, which is named after Ulysses Grant, which is not in danger because he was on the Union side. But I drive by there a few times a day, and the construction firm doing the construction there is Little Dixie. That's just the fabric of so many communities, especially like where we are in Missouri, that was such a torn state during that time of our history.
Yeah, it's such a subtle but yet not so subtle undercurrent. It's almost as if we're immune to it, and that's why I think we see the slow erosion of worker protections and civil rights and voting rights, and it really takes those images in Charlottesville to really like slap us in the face with the other side. I mean, it's amazing that, it's 2017, folks, and we're still fighting these battles as if it's the Civil War.
Indeed. Or, as you said, we're immune to some of that discord, at least we have been, and it hasn't made a large impact on this community. Not to say that we don't respect the fact that it does bother some people, and some people will be impacted by that. But can we do it in a civil way or with civility is what you're saying?
Well, and I think, in Tuesday night's event is not the first conversation. It's not going to be the last conversation about this. We've been talking about, minority policing and disproportionate minority contact with law enforcement and the vehicle stop reports. We've been talking about community policing and look, I'm ready to move forward on this. And if we need to have more community input on this, I think that's valuable. I want to listen to my constituents and certainly taxpayers and those stakeholders on this issue to figure out what we want our police department to look like and move forward.
We will move forward on our discussion about things that the city will take up perhaps tonight at its city council meeting. If you want to join us, callers and listeners, you can at 442-8255 or 1-800-229-5378. The article that was run in the Tribune late last week that had to do with whether to put a ballot issue on the November election ballot or not, and how the county clerk, Taylor Burks, is saying, do we really need to spend $160,000 to $250,000 on a, I think, would that be a single issue ballot? Because I can't think of anything else that people are going to be voting on this year in November.
It would, and to really make it make sense, I mean, the county and in other cities, municipalities in Boone County would probably benefit from sharing in the cost of that special election. But, you know, I don't know that that issue is ripe, and I've always seen that use tax issue more as a placeholder, if you will, that, you know, until the state of Missouri opts into that streamlined sales tax, or until Congress adopts the Main Street Fairness Act, you know, we can levy online sales taxes all we want, but there's not a mechanism to collect it unless it's voluntary. And you know, I think that issue probably needs more discussion, and it's probably fair to wait until we have some more statewide participation or assimilation for it.
Sort of related to that, in the Tribune late last night, it was posted online. It would probably be in this morning's paper, but I leave home before the paper gets there. And I'm trying to analyze the reason of this, but it was a story that said Business Loop CID report, online shopping not affecting retailers. We have heard so much from the city manager that online shopping is impacting the revenue that the city receives. This article seems to be contradicting that, saying, well, not the situation along the Business Loop 70 area where the Business Loop CID has looked at its retail vendors there, and they are saying we don't see that problem.
I read that too, and I know they're collecting more sales taxes than they anticipated when they formed that CID. I also know that you know, some of our traditional retailers are clearly struggling. I mean, look, Macy's is empty. There are the Columbia Mall, has some excess capacity there. If you look at downtown, I could probably argue part of that is attributable just to the changing demographic of downtown, shifting from retail, first floor retail shops to, you know, the influx of residential housing. But when you have that many residents downtown, aren't they also, you know, consuming and generating sales tax? I think it's probably, you know, to me that probably goes, that probably enhances my argument that use tax issue probably needs some additional discussion to really figure out where do we have some leakage and where are we seeing, you know, some attrition due to the new economy.
Speaking of what is happening downtown and speaking about the area, what have you heard recently as far as occupancy rates, if anything, because we're thinking about the start of the new school year or semester, the fall semester at the University of Missouri. They've really worked hard, those who are constructing the new apartment buildings downtown. The Rise is open, but there's another one that I think they've really been working hard on. I can't remember the name of it, down where Bingles used to be. Mm-hmm. But what are you hearing from those who look at the enrollment at the university and also trying to figure out what is the trend and what is the future of all the apartments that we have?
Yeah, and I don't want to give out any specific numbers because everything I've heard is anecdotal and not directly from the owners, but I can tell you I think the Rise is probably close to full occupancy, certainly above that you know, that magic number of about 83% that I think most residential units need to break even. I don't know about the new one because it hasn't, I don't even think it has an occupancy rate or occupancy permit yet. That youth center at the corner of Turner and Providence, I think we're about a week delayed. And so they had some students in temporary housing waiting to move into that. Again, don't know what their total occupancy rate is. I was at the helped welcome about 800 international students on Tuesday afternoon to Columbia, Missouri, and a lot of the corporate sponsors and booths there from student housing complexes, and I talked to a number of them that were probably off, and these were well established, probably 10-year-old student housing complexes off of Old 63, mm-hmm. That they were certainly seeing a migration towards downtown that was affecting their occupancy rates. And I would say that their occupancy rates were below 60%, which anytime you're below that, I don't know how you can service the debt long term and try to hold that unless it's like a REIT, a publicly traded development. You know, I'm concerned about that, I think some of our local developers are able to hold on longer than some of the out-of-state folks. But you know, the phenomenon that we've seen with Opus District Flats, if you will, mm-hmm. Their business model is to build it, fill it, and then sell it. We've already seen that happen, and you know, the local community is really the losers of that. When you know, they buy a lot of their goods out of town. They get trucked in. Their workers are temporary that come in from out of state, build this, and then leave. You know, it's something that I paid attention to as soon as I was elected to kind of put a moratorium on that until we could really fix the zoning downtown to address some of those parking issues and just, you know, the residential impact issues of that with our utility system.
How do you anticipate a city, as a city, can it anticipate less demand, which will end up in some places going under or being unfilled or closing down and then just sitting there? Is there a role for the city to play in anticipating that and then saying, when that happens, here is our strategy?
Well, I think anytime, you know, whether it's a retail sector or that residential sector, we have to be prepared for it in terms of how it impacts a couple different areas, and I'll tell you about that. And you know, for the most part, with respect to that demand, I want the private sector to determine it. Look, if these guys think they can fill their beds, they're going to build it, and when they don't think that, they're going to stop investing in Columbia. So to me, that's something that we should monitor. I think where the city comes into play here is how we anticipate demand for our water, sewer, electrical capacity, and where do those future ratepayers come from? And to me, to the extent we were subsidizing those residential housing developments with our infrastructure, our water, sewer, electricity, is where we have to be very careful. I think we were inadvertently contributing to that housing bubble. And, you know, when we brought in that Flat Branch Sewer Relief Project, we anticipate there being ratepayers to pay that off. And when those ratepayers, i.e. these tenants, student tenants, do not materialize, it's the rest of our taxpayers and ratepayers, like you and I, that have to pay for the bond debt for that infrastructure. So, yes, I do think there's a responsible role for city government to play, because we're the ones that have to shoulder the cost and upfront the money for those infrastructure improvements.
Before we run out of time, I'll just ask if you happened to see the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, I think it was their front page story for the Sunday morning, and that had to do with the Missouri State mm-hmm. wanting to, I thought that was like a challenging. That's the big headline on the front of the Sunday St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Missouri State U takes on Mizzou.
It's not just our higher education students that they're competing for. They want our Show Me State games. They want our Misha, yep. You know, Missouri High School Athletic Association basketball tournaments and music festivals and yeah, absolutely. And it's something that we need to work on together as a community with not only our Convention and Visitors Bureau, but our business community and our University of Missouri. And, you know, that name change, while controversial, I think really elevated, MSU's, Missouri State University, Southwest Missouri State University's status. And to me, again, this really goes to our state legislators trying to balance investments in higher education. There's only so much money to go around. And it's responsible that we not duplicate a med school in Springfield, or that we, you know, mm-hmm. I think there are responsible investments to be made that really enhance certain disciplines and majors and grad programs. And for a number of reasons, I think the University of Missouri should be the flagship and continue to be the flagship university here in Columbia.
I would just say to those who say, I didn't see that article, you can go online at stltoday.com, and I think it would still probably be one of the prominent articles on that homepage for St. Louis Post-Dispatch, or find a St. Louis Post-Dispatch and you can see it. You won't miss it. It's on the front page yesterday. And again, full of charts and full of trends and full of information about how the school in Springfield, the main university there, would love to take the undergraduates and become the main undergraduate choice here in this state.
If I have just a couple of minutes, please. I want to follow up on. I went to this international student welcome picnic Tuesday afternoon in Peace Park, and you know, we have about 3,000 international students here. We have about 1,000 visiting scholars here that live in Columbia anywhere from 5 to 10 years and some longer. And I stood in the food line and personally greeted about 200 students, and I'm so amazed and proud of their resilience. I mean, a lot of these kids were in China the day before and flew from China to Dallas to Columbia Regional, and here they are in Peace Park in Columbia, Missouri, already settled in an apartment, already have furniture, already getting acclimated to our culture, and I just, you know, more than anything, I just wanted to convey that you are welcome here, and that we are so happy to have them here. A lot of them bring their families here. A lot of their families, you know, save their entire lives to be able to send their child to a Western university. And I think that's part of what makes Columbia unique, and that we're probably all the beneficiaries of what they contribute to Columbia's society and community.
Appreciate you sharing that. Thank you for being here also.
Thank you, David.
Mayor Brian Treese on KFRU.